Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, from hearty family dinners to individualised mini morsels, few culinary delights offer as much versatility as the humble pie. Savoury fans can enjoy everything from a helping of steak and ale to a slice of chicken and leek pie, but those with a sweeter tooth might turn to apple or even key lime pie. But when is a pie not a tart? How can you turn out perfect pastry every single time? Well, to answer all of those questions, I'm joined now from our Limerick studio by Agnes Boucher-Hayes, home economist with the Technological University of the Shannon. Good morning, Agnes.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, these pies have been around just about forever. The pie that we love and know, though, where did it originate from?
So, So they have been around for time immemorial, and there's so many interesting different bits and pieces about them. But pies, as we would know them, as some sort of a pastry, now not necessarily pastry as we'd know it, but it would have been a flour, water, maybe some sort of fat, would have come from Egypt, and then the Egyptians would have had it. And they would, there is one recipe they have that has a rye dough, goat's cheese and honey, which doesn't sound that bad. That would have then, obviously, with the movement of people and armies and, you know, the Romans and the Greeks as well. But they used to use these as ways then in more modern history, in the, like when we look at the Northern Hemisphere, we would have changed the pastry because we wouldn't have had olive oil. The Egyptians, Romans and Greeks would have had olive oil and would have used that, but the Northern Europeans would have used a lard or a butter or some sort of fat like that, a more solid fat. And we would have, they would have been, the pie then would be made and it could be sent out in a boat, on a ship, so that people wouldn't have to bring lambs or meat and butcher and cook on board.
So there were storage vessels.
So there was storage. There was Tupperware, Claire, is, you know, one of the things that comes up a lot. There were like a Tupperware. Now, having said that, I would still go by the recommended food guidelines that are in place today because our circumstances are very different and what we, you know, how we handle food is very different now than before. But yeah, they were like Tupperware. So, you know, we see that as well then with different types of pies that would have been generated at different stages. I'm kind of a little bit fascinated, to be honest, about with Cornish pasties.
Yeah.
And they got... They've got protected status, the Cornish pasty. But in the, you know, pies at one stage, in around the 13th century, pies would have been for people who were very rich. You know, the royalty, the upper classes, people who had, so there would have been meat and spices and things like that involved in them. And that then, of course, you know, filtered down to the hoi polloi, and the Cornish pasty came about. And again, it was Tupperware, it was practicality. You were able to take your pie with you, you could drop it down a mineshaft, and if that pastry was good, Claire, it would not break.
It would stay together.
It would stay together, yeah.
And the Cornish pasty, is that where we have this call and answer that comes
there
with
is,
it?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So there is apparently the Cornish pasty in the 17 and 1800s, they would have been used with miners, tin miners. Anybody who's watched Poldark would see the miners going to the tin mine. There was just, you know, and they would have their pasty with them, but sometimes they were sent uncooked, and there were bell maidens who did the cooking outside the mine, and they would shout down "Hagen, Hagen, Hagen," which was the Cornish for the Cornish pasty, and the lads down below would say "Oi, oi, oi!" They were ready for lunch. Mm-hmm. So that then came to "Oggy, oggy, oggy," "Oi, oi, oi."
There you go. So that's the thing we're going to remember from all of this today, Agnes.
That's
you know
going
that.
To be one of the fun facts you got from today.
Exactly. We'll be retelling that story for
a
long time to come.
You won't know how to make pastry, but you'll remember "Oggy, oggy, oggy." The whole country will be talking.
We'll get to how you make pastry now in a minute because I know that's what you want to teach us. But is a pie really a pie if the inside isn't completely enclosed in that pastry?
Okay, so I'm going to shock everybody now. What we call a tart is technically a pie. What we in Ireland call a tart, which
like
we
an
understand.
An apple tart.
An apple tart, as we call it, a tart. That's technically, in the culinary terms, a pie, because there is pastry above and below and it's completely encased.
Ah, so that's the definition. So is it above, below and completely enclosed?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm only going to hazard a guess that a tart in France is what, you know, the translation for that is pie. So that's where probably a bit of the confusion comes to play. So what we call a tart is technically a pie. So if you have a quiche is a tart, whereas an apple tart, as we know it, with pie, with pastry above and below, would be considered a pie in culinary terms. But then you have, like, you know, people have lattice and pastry lattices and things like that. But equally, Claire, we have shepherd's pie, we have fish pie. These things are not technically pies, you know, but that's we're getting into technicalities.
Because they have potato toppings and nothing on the bottom.
And nothing on the bottom. And equally, you might have, you know, a beef and Guinness. I'd see, you know, on menus, you can see beef and Guinness pie, but they wouldn't have pastry on the bottom.
So technically not a
correct.
Pie.
No.
Let's talk pastry then, because you mentioned the beef and Guinness, and you'll often have puff pastry on the top of a beef and Guinness pie.
Yeah.
But should it really be encased in short crust pastry?
Well, it can be encased in any type of pastry. So there's the difference with pastries are short crust is the most, I suppose, the easiest to make, the easiest to handle, and the least time consuming. And that is simply butter, flour and water. Half of the amount of fat to flour, and then you keep everything cold and it's brought together with water. And then you start to diverge, and people throughout, you know, time and memoriam started adding different bits and pieces. So if you want to make a rich short crust pastry, which some people do, sometimes they want it to be a little bit richer, they might add an egg. If they want it to be sweeter for a dessert, they'll add sugar. But the basis is always the flour and the butter, and it can be water.
Mm-hmm.
But when you come to, so within the pastry family, you would have puff pastry, which is, you know, that is the hardest to make. That is the one that is most challenging and takes most time. Then you would have a flaky pastry and you would have rough puff pastry. You will get similar results with all, but the best, you know, the more time you take, the higher the flake will be. And that will be like, you know, if you had a meal full, you can see the layers of pastry in the middle. And that's the desired effect there. But you can any of those types of pastries can be used for a pie.
Okay.
But if you're at home, you're going to use, if you're making pastry, you're probably just going to make a short crust pastry or use a roll out pastry.
It can't really go wrong, you know, with
the short crust
pastry. And you've helpfully put some recipes together for us, and they're up online, rte.ie/todaycb. Our listeners are demanding the answer to this question, Agnes.
Go on, yeah.
Can you explain the difference between a tart and a torte? T-O-R-T-E.
I'd say it's the price, Claire.
It's not a baking blind thing, is it? Because I know baking blind is really important if you want to avoid a soggy bottom, which we all do.
No. Now, to be honest, I could say millions of things, but I'll stop myself now or I'll get into trouble. No, there is no difference. A tart is a tart. So you would have an open, like, tart case, which would be, like, you would have, I'm just thinking of a fruit tart. So you would bake the pastry blind. So you could use a short crust pastry, you could use a rich short crust pastry, and you will put it into a tin. Now, one I suppose, nuance would be that a savoury pie or a savoury tart would have a straight edge, and a sweet tart, so the filling is sweet, would usually have a fluted edge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a small thing. So you will make the pastry, you will fill your pie case or your tart case, and then you will bake it blind. And baking blind is a technique that means that you can prepare in advance. You can bake fully blind, which means you can hold that tart case and put in a sealed container, and it will last for a good amount of time. Or you can par bake it, which you would do with a quiche Lorraine, and then you would pour in your filling, and then you will finish the baking in the oven. But I don't know the difference between tart and torte.
Mm, that's fine. That's fine.
Is that okay?
We'll absolutely forgive
you
that.
You won't fire me.
Is it always essential though to do the baking blind if you're making a pie?
If you're doing something like a quiche Lorraine, it certainly helps. It definitely helps, because what you're doing is you're giving the pastry a chance to dry out and for the ingredients to come together before wet ingredients are put on top.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making what we would understand as an apple tart in a shallow plate, an enamel plate more often than not, Not necessarily. It would depend on thickness and the thickness of the pastry as well. And remember, with your quiche Lorraine, you want a certain, you want a little bit of thickness. You want, you know, you don't want it too thick. You want a little bit because you don't want the filling to seep out.
Absolutely not. And you want the nice crunchy.
Yeah, you want the,
you know, the different texture with the with the pastry underneath. Yeah. Right, that's really important. Mm. Now, the decorations on top of the pies, then, are they important to get right, or can we just bypass them? You need to do something with your extra pastry, don't you?
Well, you can save it. I mean, one of the things that can happen, if you make a good bit of shortcrust pastry, you can put that back into your fridge and you can save it for another day.
Can you freeze it?
Oh, you can, of course, yeah. Sure, don't you buy frozen pastry?
I suppose you do, yeah. See, if you wanted to go down that road, Agnes, you could buy frozen pastry.
But like, if you think about it in those terms, so, you know, and I'm not being facetious, but just if you, you know, if we think about what we see in frozen in the shops, you know, we can freeze pastry. So it can be frozen, but it will last inside in your fridge, you know, say around autumn time, or if you've a glut of apples and, you know, you tend to, if you're a baker and you tend to be cooking, you'll keep it in your fridge and you'll have it there ready to go as and when required. But you can freeze it, just give it a little, because cold pastry loves cold pastry, because when the that gives all of the ingredients a chance to really sing together, then when it hits the heat, it allows dramatic change in the texture. So, you know, when we're making pastry, one of the things we'd always try to do is keep everything cold as possible. Cold water, cold butter. You know, you take it out and you cut it up, and you use only the tips of your fingers when you're rubbing in the flour. And then you'll use a knife. You won't. You try to keep your hands out of pastry as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good to know. And then very important to cut some air holes in the pastry as well, because we're enclosing everything in here, but you've got to let the air out when it's baking.
And it depends. Yeah, you absolutely would, because remember, what's inside is cooking as well, and there's water coming out of it, and that's the steam. So you know, you have a few little vents, and you allow the air to come out, the steam to come out, and that means that the shape and the integrity of the pastry will be held in place, that it's strong enough to hold, that it's not, again, the sogginess wouldn't be there, so that the integrity is there to hold it. And again, you have that lightness and crispness that you want.
Okay, and pies are getting the social media treatment as well, aren't they, Agnes? Very fashionable now online.
Well, galettes are very fashionable. My French mightn't be great. And they are, if you want a very rustic looking thing, so these are from Normandy, and basically you can put a piece of pastry out, put whatever you'd like in the centre, and then fold the pastry. There doesn't have to be any finesse, you know, to the same degree that there would be, because pastry can be quite, you know, it can look beautiful, and chefs can be really exceptionally fussy about it. But sometimes when you're getting ready, you know, when if you're a home cook and you're just practicing, galettes are a good place to start, you know.
They're easy.
And they're easier, yeah. And they look quite rustic, and they're quite good. And then a more refined version would be a pâté verte, which is pastry on the bottom, a little bit of something in the middle, and then pastry over the top as well.
All right. Well, Agnes, thank you very much. And also for putting up those recipes for us there on rte.ie/today CB. Lots of recipes there from Agnes Boucher-Hay.